The days are getting shorter, but the lights couldn't be brighter. This time of year, baseball is different, and the whole world is watching. All of the clutch hits, the game-saving grabs, the plays at the plate, and the head-first slides under the tag. That's peak baseball. Experience all of the autumn action. It's postseason season. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
Boomer and Geo coming to you live from the traveling Built Ford Tough studio on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. We've got a bug invasion that happened just 10 seconds ago.
Who was the pitcher for the Yankees with the midge?
Oh, Jabba Chamberlain.
Yeah, I feel like Jabba Chamberlain right now. It's like the bugs woke up when the sun came up.
It was unbelievable.
And they're attracted, obviously, to the lights here.
Yeah, so they're flying around. I don't know if you could see it on CBS Sports Network, but they are there. They are small, so it's we'll be able to live here. I think we'll be able to get through this.
You know what it is? These bugs should be dead by now.
Yeah, I know.
But they're not, because the last 5 weeks have been unbelievable weather.
You know what drives me? I cannot understand this. And maybe you could explain this to me.
Climate change?
No, not that.
Okay.
Like with these bugs. So like if it's freezing cold for like a week, but then you get a warm day out of nowhere, and these bugs just pop out, and they're back again.
Yeah.
Where are they?
Yeah.
What are they doing? Are they eggs that were laid, and then like it's warm and they hatch? What the hell? How does that happen? Are they all just hanging out somewhere?
Eddie.
Yeah, right, Eddie. Do you have an answer? He's probably not even there. Oh, no, there he is. Eddie, do you have an answer?
I do not.
Yeah, see? Great mystery.
Look at Eddie's wearing his Dan Marino jersey today.
Every
all
Monday.
Pumped up about that 15-10 win over the Patriots.
Ugh.
That game was unwatchable.
Get this act here. All right, so let's get into this Jets-Vikings game. So the Vikings did not play well offensively at all. It was their worst performance offensively of the year, and that has a lot to do with the Jets' defense being very good. The Jets should have come back and won this game. There's no doubt in my mind that that's should have been the result, but the Jets' offense is just, it's a mess. It's in disarray. Aaron Rodgers, I know he had 13 completions to Garrett Wilson, but still there's times where they're not on the same page. Of course, the Mike Williams throw, the Stephon Gilmore interception. Aaron Rodgers, to me, it looks as old as he's ever looked. He gets just absolutely waylaid a couple times. I honestly thought he tore his ACL when his knee bent in that way and he was screaming and he grabbed the back of his leg. I was like, he tore his ACL. But thank God he comes back into the game. So, from my perspective, the offense is out of sync, and he looks old and beat up. I know you see it from the player's perspective and a quarterback's perspective, so let me hear what you saw yesterday.
Well, like I was saying earlier, I don't think that they're all that creative when it comes to offensive game planning and
sort of like
formation.
Garrett Wilson said, right?
Well, it's formations, it's different groupings of players on the field. Breece Hall is basically non-existent for some reason, and there could be a lot of reasons for that. I don't necessarily know that he deserves to be on the field as much as he is right now, which is really disappointing because everybody was counting on him. It really comes down to one play. Garrett Wilson is going wide open down the right sideline, and Aaron Rodgers overthrows him. Now, I know he was under pressure, but, those are the plays that, need to be made in order to win games, especially in a game and where you're grinding. They're grinding, and I keep saying this is only their fifth game that they have been together. It feels like Aaron Rodgers has been here for 30 years.
Yeah.
But he has not. He's only played five games, and two out of those five games, I thought that they were getting better because they were really balanced. They were running the ball effectively, and they weren't throwing the ball a lot. And then when you looked at the post-game statistics, what you saw is you saw a lot of guys involved. You saw the running game that was a big part of their success, and they weren't throwing the ball 50 times. There was a point in this game where I know they were playing catch-up where I think they had 18 attempts, passing attempts in a row, or maybe it was 19 before they ran the ball. But they had the ball at the end. You have a Hall of Fame quarterback. And this is a game that you expect to win. I expected them to win the game 24-23.
Yeah, they should have. Yeah.
And unfortunately, he throws a really bad ball to Williams down the sideline where it has to be a high and outside throw or a low and outside throw. It can't be a low and inside throw because then it gives the defensive back a chance to make the interception, which Stephon Gilmore did. So, yeah, I still think they're out of sync, but they're out of sync because they're unbalanced. They can't run the ball. They couldn't run the ball against the Broncos. Then they were playing catch-up here against the Vikings, especially late in the game. The other thing about this particular game is that the defense gave up 16 points.
Yeah.
You know, he threw another interception that was returned for a touchdown.
Yep.
And we've seen Van Ginkle do this now twice.
I was thinking about getting a jersey, the Van Ginkle jersey.
I mean, he did it against the Giants, and then he did it against the Jets.
And what a tremendous signing. They got him off the Dolphins last year. Just phenomenal.
Smart play. He's a really smart player, and if you listen to some of the Vikings talking after the game on defense, is they have a number of different players that they can interchange doing different things because they understand the concepts of what Brian Flores is trying to do. Brian Flores had him down in Miami, so he knows him, and he knows, hey, look, when I call this defense, you can do this. You can go up here. You can play there. And he's kind of playing, Van Ginkle is kind of free and easy. You know, like he understands what's happening around him, and he puts himself in great position. I mean, the interception on Daniel Jones in week one was ridiculous. Hey. That's more on Daniel than anybody else because that was behind the line
of scrimmage.
Still
got to be in the right position to make the play.
But he read the play. Yeah. So he reads the play here, and quite frankly, This was the interception, and if you remember, I think it was against the Dolphins. The Titans were playing the Dolphins. I think it was a Sunday night or a Monday night game. It was one of the primetime games. And Will Levis, in the beginning of the game, throws an interception to a defensive tackle.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because they're doing this interchange defense where we call it a fire zone when I played, where they show you one thing, and they bring somebody, and they drop somebody off into coverage. But Van Dinkel basically duped Aaron Rodgers, and you would think, being around for 20 years, you're not going to get duped by that kind of defensive play. But that shows me that they're still not in sync offensively, or they don't have enough answers for Aaron to go to another play.
Yeah, and I know this has been a talking point with Rob Saleh since he's been here, but it's getting even more frustrating as this team is scuffling. What does he do on game day? What does he do? He just loiters. He keeps his arms crossed. He stares. Occasionally, he claps after a good play and slaps the hands of the defense of the offense coming off the field. I never see him talking to anybody. I never see him with an iPad talking to anybody about anything. He does nothing. And this is not just a knock for the hell of knocking Rob Saleh. Watch every other head coach in the game. And they are more active and into the football game than this guy is.
But here's the one thing I will say that I do appreciate. If I were a coordinator that worked underneath him, I would appreciate the fact that he's allowing me to do the things that I get paid to do, and that's make decisions. So he's letting Jeff Albrecht call the defense, and I'm sure he's talking to him on the headset. You may not see it, but they're talking, and he's talking with
people. Does he talk to any of the players?
I'm not saying that he's not talking to the players. I'm just telling you he is talking to the coaches. He is engaged with the coaches, and he is engaged with, are we going for it? Are we not going for it? Do we want a blitz? Do we not want a blitz? Maybe not so much on the offensive side because that's not his side of the game.
Yeah.
But I did hear yesterday, I think it was in the pregame, where they were talking about what Aaron Rodgers has said about working with a defensive head coach, and that the fact that the defensive head coach will actually sit in the quarterback meetings and give a defensive perspective to the quarterbacks, which according to, I think it was Kurt Warner yesterday, Aaron Rodgers says he likes that. So I don't know how much is BS. I don't know how much they're just trying to fight off all the negativity and saying all the right things publicly. But behind the scenes, there's probably some tension because losing games like this and throwing three interceptions and the offense looking listless like it did yesterday as it had against Denver, that is troublesome without question.
Yeah, and Aaron Rodgers is not going to make it through the season. I'm not saying he's going to have a season-ending injury, but he's going to miss time. He's getting his ass kicked. And to come off an Achilles, to be the age that he is, to be limping around and getting the snot kicked out of you every week. I mean, he really was in a position to have a massive season-ending injury yesterday with that knee. He's getting killed. And I mean, the offensive line for the Jets is below average. But that's being kind.
But here's the thing that I told you about when you watch Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning play, the reason that they lasted as long as they did and the reason that Aaron has lasted as long as he did is because, well, Aaron was a little bit more of an escapability quarterback, which he has shown a little bit this year. There's no question about that. But even you said this at the beginning of the season. I'm always going to reflect back on this because I thought this is a very smart thing that you said about playing quarterback, and I didn't really think about it. But he's got to play the game more the way that Tom Brady played the game the last 6 or 7 years of his career, and that is in the pocket, getting rid of the football. Do not hold on to football.
And they did that late in the game. I mean, but just not well enough. And the problem is, too, you know, when you don't run the ball effectively at all.
But, you know, I thought late in the game before the interception, as he was throwing, they did run a running play in there, and they gained a first down, I think. Mm-hmm. But I felt like they finally got like some rhythm going in the passing game. Remember how we were talking about who was it that threw like 50 passes? Caleb Williams threw 50 passes in a game and they lost. And I think maybe it was against Houston or somebody. I forget who it was 2 or 3 weeks ago. And I'm like, I was really happy that Caleb would throw that many times in a game because I want him to kind of finally get into a rhythm that he can do it in an NFL game. And he's gotten progressively better since that time. Do you remember when Mark Sanchez and the Jets went down to Baltimore and they got hammered on a Sunday or Monday night?
It was never the same after that.
Right, but because he had a defensive head coach and he was talking about grounding and pounding, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh my God, this is going to ruin the quarterback. The quarterback should have came back the next week, and even if you lost, I want Mark Sanchez throwing the ball 50 times because mm-hmm. I want him to get back into his rhythm and to feel like, hey, this is my team and this is the passing game. So I kind of felt like the Jets at least had that in the fourth quarter yesterday, that things were moving. Now, here's the one thing I think that they should do. If they're going to run their offense the way that they're running it, which is pretty much bland vanilla when it comes to creativity with formations and personnel groups, and this is my opinion, I would go as fast as I possibly could because Aaron Rodgers could call these plays quickly, and I would do no huddle, and I would get him going, and I would try to use his brain power at the line of scrimmage and go quickly to force defenses not to be able to get creative themselves and confuse the offense the way that it has been the last 2 weeks against the Broncos and the Vikings.
All right, I'm going to preface this by saying I don't believe that every national broadcaster hates your team. I actually thought it was very funny when Boog Sciambi said, I know that everybody thinks that we're rooting against both the Brewers and the Mets, and we hate your team, and people think Joe Buck roots against your team and all of that stuff. It doesn't happen. These guys are professionals. They're national broadcasters. They do not hate your team. You're just used to your local announcers. However, you cannot have a Jets fan call a Jets game. You can't. And I went in there with an open mind thinking that Rich Eisen would be professional about it. He just wasn't. And I don't even know who to blame. I don't even know if I can blame him because he's a diehard Jets fan. And you can't, like, stop that. I mean, he's talked about that on his show for years and years and years. He's been outward about it. He's fired up about the team when they win. He's downtrodden when they lose. He's very emotional about the team. There was no doubt. And I'm not going to make and we're on remote today, and I'm not going to make guys sift through the audio. There were several instances where the Jets go 3 and out, and Rich Eisen goes,
he's disgusted.
He's like, and the Jets go 3 and out. And when the Vikings go 3 and out, he's like, and the Vikings go 3 and out, and there's some life here for the Jets. And I'm like, come on, man.
Now, I didn't think, I got that from Rich. I understand. I didn't get that from Kurt.
No,
Kurt
of
was
course
fine.
Not.
I think Kurt brings a lot to a
Kurt
broadcast.
Kurt was great.
Yes.
He was fine. I'm just kidding. Right, so, like, I'm mad at Rich Eisen, but at the same time, like, someone at the NFL, you can't have a Jets fan calling a Jets game.
I don't know who else they have, by the way.
Dust off anybody. I don't care.
Dust off anybody.
I mean, someone who's not a Jets fan.
That'd be like having Mike Greenberg do the game, right?
Yes. Joe Beningo.
Oh, could you imagine that?
I mean, you freaking kidding me? I mean, this idiot. What a loser. Oh, here we go now. Here we go. There's freaking Van Ginkle now in the end zone. Of course. Of course it's a guy named Van Ginkle. Couldn't just be Jones or Smith. It's got to be Van Ginkle. What's with the hair, bro? Cut the hair. This is 1968, bro. Anyway, so yeah, that just annoyed me as a fan yesterday watching the game. It's like, dude. It's like,
all right, so you're coming from the Viking perspective, so I would think that a lot of the Jet fans appreciated it.
Maybe, yeah. I don't think they appreciated anything yesterday. The Jets fan, it was a miserable football game, and it was another tough watch. And I did love Justin Jefferson after the game. This is why I love this guy. He basically said, we got a bye week, and it'll be nice to have the time off, but I don't really even want it right now because we got to get better. Like, we were bad offensively today, and I want to get in and look at the film and get better. And I was like, I wanted to reach through the screen and hug the
guy. The only thing that could have been worse had Sam Darnold throw, you know, for 290 yards and four touchdowns.
Yeah, he looked like he got hurt again, too, yesterday.
He got drilled.
The hell out of me.
And he got drilled. Yeah, I think he got the wind knocked out of him, and he may have, like, a bruised rib or something.
Yeah, and then Nick Mullins came in for a snap.
And like, what did he do? He throws the ball down the sideline. You know, if that were the Jet backup quarterback coming in and doing that, that would have been intercepted.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So Kevin O'Connell, in a way, he's got a little bit of the Kyle Shanahan in him. It's like, whoever goes in there is going to have some sort of success. Remember back in the day where it was actually Mullins was there, too, in San Francisco, and that C.J. Beathard.
Yes.
They were throwing all these bums out there, but they would have success, like a minimal success, but better than any other team that would have those guys. You kind of get a little bit of the same thing with Kevin O'Connell, whether it's Mullins or Joshua Dobbs or whoever it is. Like, they'll find a way to get up and down the field because he's such a great coach.
You know what was great? That the NFL Network did show the 2010 Hard Knocks where Mike Tannenbaum was cutting Kevin O'Connell.
Yeah.
He brought him in. You got beat out by this guy. You got beat out by that guy. You know, it's good to see it, everything. Next thing you know, now he's the head coach.
Yeah.
And Mike Tannenbaum sitting there, you know, on ESPN.
Yep.
I mean, who's got the last laugh?
And
actually, who's got, you know, he is a really good coach.
Yeah, without a doubt. He's a coddle guy, but a great coach.
Big coddle guy, I understand.
But it's working.
Did you have your sweats on yesterday?
No, I did not. I didn't have my sweat. I wore them on Friday.
I know, but those are like lounging around sweats. That would have been perfect.
Yeah, no, I know. I wore it all day Friday.
Let me ask you a question. Do you like a 9:30 game?
No, don't.
You know, I was playing with a bunch of guys golf yesterday, from the West Coast. And they were saying the best part about NFL Sunday is that we get up early and it's over by 8:30 at night.
Well, it being over early is great.
Yeah.
But I don't love the 9:30 game.
You know, like,
I wish every game could be played at 1:00.
You get up and have like a little avocado toast and coffee and watch your game.
Because then the day is just so long. It's like, and then you get to the Met game, too. It was too much. Everything needed to start at 1 o'clock yesterday.
Time out. We can't complain that it's too much because we always complain it's not enough.
No. I'm saying
never have teams.
You asked me if I wanted the 9:30 game.
Okay.
The 9:30 game, I didn't like. If it was played at 1, it would have been fine for me.
Just don't come back at me like it's too much. It's not too much.
It's too much to start at 9:30 and be done at 8 o'clock.
Playoff baseball in October.
It's too long of a day. I would rather start at 1 o'clock. Get the other stuff, get the adult stuff out, and then start at 1 o'clock.
By the way, did you see my boy Precious Achiuwa go off against the Hornets?
Oh, my God. You're amazing.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Coming to you live from the Traveling Built Ford Tough studio here at Glen Oaks Club. It's the Boomer Esiason Foundation golf outing, year number 31. What a wonderful, wonderful place this is. You can see in the background here at CBS Sports Network, this golf course is in impeccable shape. It's always in impeccable shape. Craig Currier doing the job here every single year, making this place look amazing, him and his crew. So very, very excited to play here again. So we have got Mets tickets for Game 3, Tuesday at Citi Field to give away. So we're going to do it like we did the Yankee tickets last week. You're going to hear a Howie Rose drop this hour. Do not call now. You call when you hear the Howie Rose drop next hour. And when you hear the Howie Rose drop next hour, you call 866-540-WFAN, 866-540-9326, and you have to be caller number 7. So here is a drop. Do not call now. Just file it away and make sure when you hear it next time, you call the contest line. So let's hear it.
The Beaver.
The Beaver.
So that was Howie Rose?
The Beaver.
Yeah, I could hear it now. So that's Howie Rose saying the beaver. So when you hear Howie Rose say
the beaver.
The beaver.
But what do you think he was talking about? It sounded like Phil, too. I was like, what is he doing now?
Oh, my gosh, the beaver.
The beaver.
When you hear the beaver next hour from Howie Rose, call 866-540-WFAN, 866-540-9326, and be caller number 7 to get Mets tickets, Mets-Phillies tickets, NLDS Game 3 at Citi Field.
The beaver.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh. The beaver. All right, let's get to Jerry and all the good stuff he's got. What's up, Jerry?
Brought to you by Hard Rock Bet. Roll with us. Also brought to you by Flag and Anthem. Real close for real life. You want to hear? So the Mets lost 7-6. We know that. Nick Castellanos goes 3-for-5. The home run, by the way, too. And then the game-winning hit in the ninth inning. But prior to that, in the top of the ninth, here's the euphoria. I imagine this is Howie on Mets Odyssey Radio with Vientos.
The payoff pitch. Vientos hits it high in the air to left field. It's got legs. It's deep. It's back near the wall. It is gone! Mark Vientos has added yet another chapter to what is becoming a ridiculous postseason for the New York Mets. He's tied the game.
He did. 3-for-4, 2 home runs, a double, drove in 4. That game tire made it 6-6. Yes, they lost 7-6. Here was Vientos' post game on just the ebbs and the flows of what we watched.
I think we had a great game. It was a heck of a game. Both teams battled. And I'm excited to get back to Citi Field.
And here was his manager, Carlos Mendoza. Boy, has this kid really matured in front of our eyes.
Pretty impressive. He's at bats, the way he's controlling the strike zone. But he just looks calm and very aware of the situation and on the control. So, impressive.
Impressive. Now, what was not impressive was Edwin Diaz. Now, there's no question that going to Diaz when they did made sense, did not go their way as the Phillies, he blew the save. Here was Mendoza on his closer.
You know, after he got Schwarber in the seventh to get out of that huge inning, then he gets Turner to lead off the eighth. Looks like he was pitching around Harper a little bit, and then he just couldn't put away Castellanos and stop. That finally got him for the big hit. That 3-2 slider, I think it was, didn't do too much.
No, it's right in the middle of the plate. He's right. And then here is your guy. You guys were talking about Luis Severino. He pitched well for 5 innings, and then things kind of fell apart in the 6th. But in terms of going to Philly and doing what they did.
I mean, amazing. I mean, we took 1 out of 2 in here. I mean, we've been on the road for the last 6 months, I feel like. So, I mean, it feels good. I mean, we've been winning games, so we're going to be home. The crowd is going to be into it. We're going to win some games.
Now, on the Philly side of things, there was a lot of conversation with the way the Mets battled back after Wheeler was out of the game on Saturday. They got out
Man,
to the lead yesterday.
Good, by the way, you don't want to see him again.
Phenomenal.
I mean, that was just...
Wasn't it towards the end of the season where the Mets got to him, though?
I don't remember. Maybe. It's possible.
Yeah, once Jerry got number 83 victory, he checked out. Okay.
I did not check out. I know. I still watched, but I do not remember. You might be very right about that. Here is Rob Thompson talking about the fact that his team can fight, too.
It's a bunch of experienced guys. They've been through it before. I think they... they've got a slow heartbeat and they understand situations and they just keep battling. It's a very resilient club, and you can see the same thing with the Mets. They're not going to quit either. So this is shaping up to be a classic battle.
And you were talking about the way they look. The Red Sox were called the Dirtbags, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is, they're very much like them. Brandon Marsh looks.
Yeah, I know.
What is Jesse Winker?
A dirtbag.
Okay.
But he's not, it's not the same.
He's our dirtbag.
Why are you being so difficult with this? We hate the Phillies. They're all dirty, long-haired guys, and you're sitting here, like, arguing with us. Why are you defending them? I don't understand.
I'm not defending anybody. I'm just saying we have one.
We could swap Trey Turner for Jesse Winker.
Okay.
Trey Turner, yeah. Clean cut, Winker.
Every team has one dirtbag.
Right. Phillies have a bunch.
They're a whole
they got a
line
bunch of dirtbags.
And they're straggly. Like, even Bryce Harper is not clean shaven or clean cut. Yeah.
It's not like the Yankees. Everybody looks, perfect. That's the way they're supposed to look.
Yes.
It's kind of like I'm your dirtbag for this show, I guess.
Wait, what was that?
It's like, I'm your dirtbag for this show, with the being a liberal and long hair.
Yeah, just need to not shave for a little bit.
Game three tomorrow at Citi Field. Sean Manaea, Aaron Nola will be the starters there. The Padres did hit a bunch of home runs, beat the Dodgers 10-2, and so that series tied at one game apiece as well. Yankees Royals game two tonight at the stadium. The Yankees took game one in a back and forth battle, if you will, and you've got Carlos Rodon making the start against Cole Reagans.
How do you think he's going to pitch?
Rodon?
I mean, I know this is a tough question because you could see anything.
I think he'll pitch just good. How about this? Six innings, four runs on like eight hits.
Okay.
Be okay.
Yeah.
And they'll win the game 9-6.
Oh, that'd be nice.
I think
offense waking up.
They'll win. They're not losing to the Royals. I don't see it. But then again, who knows? We'll see. That's why they play the games. And Tigers, Guardians at 4:40 this afternoon. Cleveland won easy. I think it was 7-0 on Saturday. All right, we get to the football. We start in Seattle with the Giants and the Seahawks, and Daniel Jones finding his groove.
First and 10 at the 30. Jones, play fake, back to throw, has Slayton on the deep over, lobs it for him, caught, touchdown Giants! 30 yards, Jones to Slayton on the over route, and the Giants have the lead with 10:41 to go in the third.
Wound up winning 29.
Bob 20.
Bob Papa on event. Yes, Darius Slayton, one of his eight catches. He had 122 yards on the day. Daniel Jones threw for 250. I can't even see this with my eyes. What is it? 250.
Your glasses into your right over there.
257.
I know.
Two TDs.
I want to put them on.
And by the way,
two TDs. Yeah.
One of the great things going on for the Giants right now is when they're away from home, their defense creates turnovers and gets sacks. 20 sacks. On the road
this
year.
Don't they lead the NFL in sacks this year, I think?
Yeah, 20 sacks on the road this season.
The Vikings were leading.
By the way, that's tied for the second most of three road games in the Super Bowl era. That's how good their defense is on the road.
O'Brien Burns had that one where he almost killed Geno Smith.
Well, he needs to keep doing this.
No doubt. Here is first year's Daniel Jones. There was, you pointed out, we were talking about this before, that they were shorthanded, neighbors out, Singletary out, and yet they found a way.
I mean, confident. You know, we say, we said since training camp how much we like our skill guys and how deep we think those positions are. And you saw a lot of guys step up today and make a lot of plays.
Made a lot of plays.
Let's face
it,
you know, at the end of the game, they had a chance to put the game away and they couldn't do it on offense.
True.
And it took a spectacular play by Isaiah Simmons to win the game.
But they won the game.
They won the game.
And a lot of teams do that.
I know that, and I think that Daniel played really well, and this is the third game in a row where he's given you a winning performance.
Yes, very much so. And Dexter Lawrence had three sacks to the earlier point about the defense. Seven sacks of Geno Smith on the day. Eddie, I'm skipping the Darius Slayton clip. Let's get to Westwood One's call of G's favorite play of week five, and this would be, as Al calls him, Van Winkle. as he took care of the Jets.
Third down. And six. Rodgers stomps his right foot, barks out a signal, nobody jumps, and now pressure coming at the snap, thrown to the right side, intercepted, going back the other way at the 40, to the 50, outside left numbers to the 40, and this is Van Ginkle down the sideline to the 20, to the 10, he's all the way in, touchdown Minnesota!
63 yards, that was J.P. Shadrick with the call on Rodgers.
I mean, it took you like, I don't know, 20 seconds to identify Van Ginkle was the one who picked it off. He's got blonde hair to the middle of his back, and he's a white guy. You should know that right away. You should know right away that's Van Ginkle.
I mean, he is very noticeable on the field.
I mean, what
he
are we
looks
doing?
Different than everybody else.
Yeah.
Kind of like a dirtbag.
Yeah, like a dirtbag. Come on.
Okay. 23-17. The Vikings hold them off at the end as Aaron Rodgers picked off for the third time. Here is Rob Saleh talking about Rodgers' day.
Obviously, up and down. You know, the biggest thing that we talked about going into this game was playing clean ball. And Minnesota had been feasting on pick sixes and putting their offense in position to get easy layups. And unfortunately, that pick six was a big difference in the game.
It was, and 11 penalties for 80 yards. Again, not great. Here was Rodgers himself. He's looked like he broke his leg on that one play, but was able to continue to play. Here's Rodgers.
I'm definitely banged up. I got my foot caught on a pile there. You know, but it just seems to be a low ankle sprain. You know, again, they were trying to get me in the tent, and we had a rough in the kicker, and I said, screw it, I'm going back out there.
And he did.
He wasn't even reaching for his ankle. It was.
I look like his hamstring to me.
Yeah, he was reaching for his hamstring, and then he went to the back of his knee. So yeah. Whatever. As long as he's okay,
he's okay. So he and Josh Allen both got hurt yesterday. And the interesting thing about Josh Allen is, it looked like he slammed his head on the ground.
Yeah, that was bad.
He only missed one play, right?
And he only missed one play, but they said on that same play that he hurt his ankle.
Yep. But he did finish the game.
So the good thing is that both of the teams play next Monday night, so they get an extra day there.
They do. Sunday night football, Cowboys-Steelers, they were delayed for almost 2 hours in the end. The Cowboys, one play after almost fumbling the game away, did this.
Prescott in the gun, snap is back. He has some time. He throws it in the end zone. It's a touchdown to Jalen Tolbert on the left side of the end zone, crossing in front of Deshaun Elliott with 20 seconds to play. Goodness gracious me.
Yep. Okay, that's good. 20-17, Brad Sham, Cowboys Radio with the call there. Dak Prescott to Jalen Tolbert, so they do beat Pittsburgh. Here was your guy, Mike Tomlin. I mentioned the play before that they didn't pounce on it. Here's Tomlin.
You know, I just told the team there's a fine line between drinking wine and squashing grapes in our business. And, you know, that's an example of it. You know, that ball's on the ground right there in the red area. And that's the difference.
Yeah.
You've heard that one?
I have heard that one.
No, that was pretty good.
Fine wine, squashing grapes. There's a difference between peeling potatoes and mashing them bitches. That's me some French fries.
It's a tough loss for them because they probably should have won, but they do not. They are 3-2. The Cowboys are 3-2. The Commanders won again. They are 4-1. The Bengals wound up losing this game, but I want to play this for you anyway. This was the Ja'Marr Chase touchdown, the 70-yarder. Listen to your guys, Horton Lapham, on this.
Joe's thrown four touchdown passes to tie his career high. Throws a short pass to Chase. Nice blocking on the edge.
Baby.
Ja'Marr to the 40.
Oh, baby.
Spinning to the 50.
Oh,
that's
baby.
A foot race. Ja'Marr to the 30. The 20. The 10. The 5. Touchdown! 70 yards. Burrow to Chase.
You think Ja'Marr Chase is going to make some money?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. He didn't stop that whole call, which was pretty, but the Ravens do win the game. Did you see the touchdown pass where Lamar Jackson drops the ball, almost gets sacked?
Spins around.
Oh, my gosh.
Straight arms, Trey Henderson.
Yeah.
Hendrickson, yes.
Just like, get away from me. And then you got McPherson. The holder drops the snap. He misses, and then the Ravens get the game-winning
field
goal.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, like, what has happened to the Bengal defense? That's the big question for me.
Well, let me ask you this. I'm going to play this Joe Burrow clip. Let's see. Skip the first one, Eddie. Play the last clip. This is Burrow. I imagine he's talking about the defense.
We're 1-4. That's not where we want to be. So obviously something has to change. You know, I'm not sure what that is on our end.
You tell me.
Well, so here's the thing. Well, I understand that, but they didn't play well early in the season.
True.
So he is lumping the whole team together in that they're not playing their best. The only thing I can say for them is that you can see the offense is there.
Yep.
It's coming around. The last 2 weeks, it has been explosive. I mean, to the point where they are one of the top two teams in the league offensively. So the question about them is really whether or not their defense can stop anybody.
Monday Night Football, Saints and Chiefs. The Saints 2-2, Kansas City out to a 4-0.
And by the way, Burrow did throw a late interception.
Mm.
On, I think it was
yes.
And that interception
was a
killer.
Yep.
And, you know, so, you know, he is taking ownership of that even though he threw for 5 touchdowns.
And lastly, the Liberty beat the Aces and the WNBA to advance to the finals. They will play either the Sun or the Lynx. That series tied 2-2. Connecticut beat Minnesota yesterday.
It's the Boomer and Geo podcast from WFAN.
All right, Boomer and Geo on the Fan and CBS Sports Network. Really great Giants win yesterday. Daniel Jones playing well. Obviously, the defense, the things we talked about, but not to be a rain on the parade or a Debbie Downer, but they're still probably the worst team in the division. I mean, what the Commanders are doing is incredible. The Browns suck, but they blow out the Browns. Jaden Daniels doesn't even play essentially the entire fourth quarter because they were so far ahead. They can't beat the Cowboys. The Cowboys win last night. They never beat the Eagles. Now, the Eagles are a little tricky. I don't know exactly what they are yet, but they're going to be better than the Giants.
Well, here's the deal. You know, there are certain franchises right now that are electric because of their young quarterbacks. Houston's one of those teams. Chicago's one of those teams. Washington's one of those teams. The Broncos are one of those teams. And then you have the middling teams where you're not really sure what you have at quarterback, and do you think that that guy is going to be a difference maker moving forward? And the Giants fall into that class. And Daniel has played well the last 3 weeks. And what was really great about yesterday is that they were able to actually do what they did on offense without Malik Nabers, which certainly showed something. But I would have, you know, it's unfortunate that the game ended on offense the way that it did, where they ran the ball three times and they ended up, I think they ran it three times at the end of the game, where they could have sealed the game away with a offensive first down, and they didn't get it, and they needed a blocked field goal return for a touchdown to end up sealing the win. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, they didn't like come away with like, they ended the game on offense like the Giants did. I mean, like the Jets did. The Jets turned the ball over. The Giants went three and out and kicked the and punted.
Yeah, no, I know. And they could have salted the game away with a better play on the offensive side of the ball. But at the same time, I mean, I can't get. I mean, they went in there. They won the game. They're down. So twice, I got to give them a ton of credit. Twice now, they have gotten off to miserable starts on the road with crazy plays. The Browns game with the fumble and then the next play touchdown, and then this the fumble in the end zone and back 100 yards the other way. And they came back and won those games on the road. Those are two. So, I know what you're saying, and you're right, but I don't want to nitpick
that. But I will say this. The time of possession that the Giants, they went on that 10-play, 79-yard drive, and they fumble it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't – that could have been a touchdown. I couldn't tell. I guess, you know, the officials couldn't actually tell, and they let the play roll run out and everything else, and they give up this touchdown, which was incredible. But to me, you can't say enough about the way that their team played without their most impactful offensive player.
Yeah.
And it's Tyrone Tracy. This is a fifth-round draft choice.
Yeah, so they what I've noticed with running – now that I'm back into this sicko fantasy football stuff, what I've noticed with backup running backs is they're going to get – not every backup running back is talented when you feel like they are, because there's some teams you plug in anybody and they go out and they produce. Like the way that Jordan Mason, even though he didn't know much yesterday, was that first week without McCaffrey. And – you see the Giants yesterday, they get production out of Tracy, who's out of nowhere, and they give him the ball, and he's good. But then there's also guys, like you watched, once Aaron Jones went out for the Vikings yesterday.
Everything changed.
And yes. That Ty Chandler's got no juice, he's got no burst, he's just, you know, sort of bouncing around, lumbering around, he stinks. So the Giants, they've looks like they got a guy back there in Tracy who's got a little bit of juice, which is great.
Which is great, and it's a benefit, and it's also a feather in the cap to Joe Shane.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, and I thought, you know, running the ball effectively as they did, and pass protection wasn't bad yesterday, especially in a very, very tough place to play.
Mm-hmm.
And to control the ball the way they did, I mean, that's a solid win. But it also kind of shows you who Seattle was. Remember, they were 3-0 at one point. And everybody's like, oh, man, that, you know, Mike McDonald's doing a great job out there and everything else. All of a sudden, a little bit of an uptick in competition over the last 2 weeks, and they've lost both games.
Yep. Yeah, paper tiger, as we've said before.
Exactly. So, to me, still the teams. The Ravens, they win 41-38. It was a back-and-forth game. I was a little surprised that their defense didn't show up and didn't play as well as they had played previously, especially against Buffalo and Josh Allen. Makes you wonder about Buffalo now.
Yeah, they're so hard to figure out. When they are on, they are, to me, the best-looking team in football when they're on. Josh Allen looks like the best player in the game, and they're unstoppable. When they're off, they're just off.
But this is two games now where they have not looked great.
Yeah.
And the Ravens have won against the Bengals and the Bills in back-to-back weeks.
Mm-hmm. And somehow lost to the Raiders.
Somehow lost to the Raiders, which is crazy.
At home.
And they had a 10-point lead.
Yeah.
And the other game, they had a lead against the Ravens, against the Chiefs in week one, and probably should have won if Isaiah Likely doesn't come out out of bounds
right.
with his toe.
Yep.
So the Ravens, to me, are still, especially with the way that Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson are playing, the question is, can Derrick Henry, as a running back over 30, make it through 17 games?
Yeah, especially with how much usage he's getting.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.